The Tom Woods Show, episode 2238.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you old timers out there from the Ron Paul 2008 campaign, you may remember my friend Larry Lepard, who spent $200,000 of his own money on full-page newspaper ads in support of Dr. Paul. Well, Larry has had an uncanny way with money over the years, and he made a presentation to my paid membership on how to insure yourself against currency debasement, that is to say, how to survive inflation. Well, I took that presentation out from behind the paywall, and I'm making it available to the general public for free. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Larry. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm very glad to welcome Paul Kenger to the show. He is professor of political science at Grove City College and editor of The American Spectator, the venerable publication that dates all the way back to 1967. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, it is great to be with you. Thanks so much.
I'm very glad to talk to you. In particular, we're talking about your co-authored book, just released, The Devil and Bella Dodd, One Woman's Struggle Against Communism and Her Redemption. Now, I'd heard of her only in connection with people who have said that there was a systematic attempt to infiltrate the Catholic Church by Marxists. And I had never really looked into it. That was the only thing I knew about this woman, that she had been a communist, and then she no longer was, and then she spilled the beans about this stuff. And then along comes your book, which I read with great interest because I want to know what exactly was the full story. Let's start off with a little background. Who is or who was this woman, first of all?
Yes, she's really a great story, Tom. She was born in 1904, died in 1969. And here we are over 50 years later, and this is the first biography of her. She did a memoir called School of Darkness, which was very popular, probably a bestseller. And it talked about, you know, that phrase, School of Darkness, not only dealt with what she did in the Communist Party, she was one of the highest ranking female communists in the United States, but also the fact that she ran the education front for Communist Party USA. She penetrated the teachers' union in New York, which is where she was and Communist Party USA was headquartered. It was literally called the teachers' union, you know, capital T, teachers, capital U, union. So that was the first real major union for teachers in the United States. And she had it thoroughly penetrated. I give data in the book. She gave data in her book. She testified before Congress and the Senate multiple times. Something like 10,000 members in the teachers' union, they had over 1,000 that were Communist Party members. And the entire leadership had been basically hijacked by the party. So I'm getting a little ahead here, but when the party saw what a job she did with the teachers' union, as well as penetrating and infiltrating other groups, they went to her also to try to penetrate seminaries, Catholic seminaries. But to back up, she was born in Paterno, Italy in 1904, had this, you know, beautiful Italian name, Bella Maria Assunta Isabella Visono. She marries a guy whose last name is Dodd in the United States. They got divorced. They didn't have children because the party told her not to have children. You know, Whitaker Chambers talks about this in Witness, how the party encouraged them to abort any children that they would have. Alger Hiss's wife, Priscilla, was told that, had an abortion, and it really wrecked her psychologically. But they had no children as far as we know.
And by the way, if that sounds implausible to anybody, you need to know that she herself reflected on this. And you can see that she's conflicted. But at one point she says, well, given a variety of factors, including my low income, it probably would have been difficult anyway. So yeah, this is not anything we made up. She tells us this.
Yeah, and she really kind of ached for children. In fact, when she left the party, she tried to adopt. And she had letters of recommendation from people like Bishop Fulton Sheen, you know, the most famous American Catholic ever, who played a major part in her conversion to the Catholic Church and fully leaving what she called the devil of communism behind. But she couldn't adopt. And that left kind of a hole in her heart, in her life. But the party told her, no, you can't have children. And like she said, you were married to the party. You were married to communism. You know, Ronald Reagan would say, Yeah, Marxism-Leninism, that religion of theirs. Raymond Aron called it the opium of the intellectuals. So they treated Marxism-Leninism like a faith. She was married to the party. She was married to the faith. She joined the party in World War II, 1943. Same year that Barack Obama's communist mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, joined the party. And she eventually had a blow up with them by the late 1940s and left. And that began for her a kind of hell where she not only was harassed and attacked, but felt her life was threatened. And of course, the first thing they did, and I want everybody to hear this, Tom, the first thing that the party did when she left was issued a press release and circulated through their media food chain to where Bella Dodd gets a call from an Associated Press reporter accusing her of what? Racism, anti-Semitism, fascism, Nazism, all the stuff that the left does today to people they disagree with. They've been doing this for 100 years. This is what they do. If they don't like you and they want to ruin you, they'll call you these exact same. They would have called her a homophobe if it was a word back then, right? But they smeared her and tried to ruin her life and almost did, if not for her conversion into the Catholic faith through Fulton Sheen and then deciding, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fight back. And she became probably the most prominent ex-communist in testifying before Congress over the final couple decades of her life.
I am particularly interested, of course, in the Catholic angle and what her role in that was. In the course of your book, you trace her development intellectually and what her activities were, and then culminating in that. I was surprised. So Bishop Sheen gets mentioned. Of course, there's a whole chapter on him, but early on, we read that Bishop Sheen apparently spoke to her about this. And then something like 4 days later, he spoke openly about the possibility of there being some kind of infiltration. But apparently he never mentioned that again. And he urged her not to name names. What would be the reason behind not naming names?
Yeah, I think Sheen was trying to protect certain clergy, maybe trying to protect the church from scandal. And the more important point that Sheen believed was, look, we simply need to fight communism. You know, he was advised this quite literally by popes, you know, Pope Pius X, Pope Pius XII. So, you know, he believed that that's how they needed to confront it. In fact, he gave her, from what we can tell, her sort of penance for her sins. In fact, she said, Tom, she said, I should go into a cloistered monastery and do nothing but pray for the rest of my life to try to redeem myself or make redemption for what I did. And Sheen said, no, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go tell the world about communism and communists and what they're doing. But as far as naming names, she never named names. And Fulton Sheen, right after he heard her confession, which was, I think, around April 7th, 1952, something like that. I give the dates in the book, went to Rome. And he gave a talk in a church in Rome, St. Susanna, where he talked about the infiltration of the church by communists in what he called a major American city. She never said anything else about it again. That was on the cover of the New York Times, by the way. But Bella Dodd did tell a number of people about the general infiltration. And we quote in the book, in addition to Sheen, about a half a dozen others, Alice von Hildebrand, Dietrich von Hildebrand, and we even tracked down and interviewed, Tom, four people. Well, it was two couples, the Leininger's and Sherry Finn, who's still alive. Her husband died recently. We actually tracked them down and interviewed them. They heard Bella say, in fact, Bella told them, they heard Bella say that she did try to infiltrate the Catholic Church. And the goal was, as she put it, and you can find these claims on the internet, but they're kind of sloppy and hard to pin down. She claimed that she helped place, quote, over 1,000 communist men, unquote, in Catholic seminaries. And it's a remarkable thing. We know that they thoroughly penetrated the mainline Protestant denominations. I've written about that at great length in books like The Devil and Karl Marx. But her penetration of the Catholic priesthood, that's an altogether different animal.
There's a lot that occurs to me to say at this point. I can imagine why, as a Marxist, you would want to do this. I mean, you mentioned Pope Pius XI. He wrote an entire encyclical in 1937 against atheistic communism. So you have this extreme, you know, today the Catholic Church has basically zero influence. Nobody cares what the local bishop thinks about anything. But the world was very, very different. I mean, just one human lifetime ago, the world was very different. And you have this very, very powerful, influential organization all over the world headed by an absolutely resolute anti-communist. So I can understand you would say, well, we got to do something about this. But if you take the church head on, it tends not to work out well for you. I mean, the French Revolution tried that, and the church only came back stronger. I mean, you think about, I mean, when St. Francis Xavier brought Catholicism to Japan, and then later that was brought underground, centuries later, tens of thousands of people, when the restrictions were lifted, had been discovered to have been practicing it all those years. You know, so
right.
All these efforts just, I mean, like right now, I think a lot of Christians want to fight even more than ever. So you might think, well, maybe the better solution would be to somehow grab hold of these institutions, which, by the way, the left is very good at doing, grabbing hold of institutions, and somehow persuading Christians that really all along they've always believed this principle or that principle, and just bring confusion into their minds. I assume this is the general idea.
Yeah, well, the long march through the institutions, right? The phrase that's attributed to Antonio Gramsci. You know, the Frankfurt School, that entire group. And it was Divini Redemptoris, 1937 encyclical by Pius XI, that called communism a satanic scourge. You can go to 2 years before the Communist Manifesto was published. It was published in 1848. There's the 1846 encyclical by Pius IX, Qui Pluribus. And that excoriated communism. So there is this steady, blistering assault by the Catholic Church against communism all the way up through John Paul II, even into Benedict XVI. And Pope Francis, the only time Francis has mentioned it, and I know this because I collect this stuff, I look for it. Francis has said, quote, the Marxist ideology is wrong. He said that in 2013. And then the next line, Tom, is, but I know a lot of Marxists who are good people or something like that. But with Francis, that is all that he has said. He has not said another word about communism. And you look at what he's doing in China, you look at what he's doing in Nicaragua, look what he's doing with Cardinal Zen. He's been bad on communism. He's been absent on the issue. But in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and prior to that, the church was solid on it. And I got to add here too, that when Fulton Sheen, I don't know if Bella, we talk about this at great length in this book, I don't know if Bella Dodd could name names of the people that she helped put in seminaries by the time that she was speaking of this in the 50s and 60s, because she never laid out to anybody what exactly her role was. I mean, as an organizer, right, including organizing, infiltrating teachers' unions, you know, this is a group effort. There's a number of different people involved. She could have been pushing papers, moving stuff along, part of the effort. I don't know. And I've had a number of people say, too, that, well, who are these priests that infiltrated? I mean, why haven't any of them came out and said, I was one of the people that Bella Dodd helped put in the seminary? Well, a lot of them, and we talk about this as well, going through a Catholic seminary is a big deal. I mean, this is years in the making. We quote Solanus Casey, who's up for sainthood in the United States. And he talked about this penetration of the seminaries. And he said that a lot of these guys eventually exposed themselves, right? They were exposed. It became clear that they weren't devout enough. I mean, to get up every morning early and go to mass and do confession and do the liturgy of the hours and everything else, a lot of these guys probably just threw in the towel. Now, on the other hand, it's quite possible, too, that a number of them hung in there and became very left of center, left-wing priests who helped give us things like liberation theology. So to the extent that the church might have went left on some of these issues, like the mainline Protestant denominations did, that could in fact be an influence of these priests who were placed in seminaries and helped infiltrate.
It seems like these priests, or let's say seminarians, would have to have been unusually precocious, because as you say in the book, at that time, because it says here that the infiltration began around 1936, it was common for a man to enter the seminary between ages 18 and 20. So imagine at that age being so ideologically rigid and having your mind made up that you're willing to devote your entire life to something like this for the sake of the great communist future. I can't imagine there were that many men who met that description.
And that's the thing with the communist fanatical devotion to their faith of Marxism-Leninism, right? So they were willing to try. A lot of them were willing to try. But frankly, a lot of them probably gave it up. And also, too, a lot of people listening who aren't Catholics might not know this, but to get through seminary and make it to the priesthood, I mean, you need to be forwarded and recommended by the rector of the seminary. If they believe that you don't have a vocation, you don't have a calling, and you're not there, they're not going to continue to push you through. And I've had some people email me who read about this in other books where I talk about it and said, 1,000 communist men, I mean, that's a lot. Well, actually, there were about 60,000 priests per year on average in the time that Bella was doing this. You know, probably about 30,000 priests generally, you know, 20,000 diocesan clergy, you know, priests in religious orders. This was the start of an upswing in vocations that would eventually reach a peak number of 59,892 priests by 1967. So almost 60,000 priests by 1967. So to put 1,000 in among 60,000, remember, Bella Dodd, when she did the teachers' union, she put 1,000 communists in a teachers' union of 10,000. So she would have looked at numbers like this as a cinch. And plus, communists, they looked at religious people as slack-jawed, superstitious morons. So they would have been very prideful in their ability to penetrate seminaries. They're probably in for a surprise when they found out how difficult it actually was.
Yeah.
But actually trying it, they probably would have been hell-bent on, oh yeah, we could do that. Let's go for it. Religion is the opiate of the masses. Let's take it down.
Well, not to mention, if you have 1,000 really, really dedicated people and 59,000 people who are just going to do their pastoral duties, you know, that's still quite lopsided. Like, if there were no supernatural element involved, my money would be on the communists because they're constantly organizing and plotting, right, or manipulating language so as gradually to make inroads into the minds of the faithful. In your chapter on the infiltration, you talk also about there were various strategies the communists adopted. And one of them was to tone down the militant atheism. And instead, you mention a communist pamphlet where there's a communist extending a hand to a Catholic worker. And so we're not going to attack their religion, but we're going to reach them on class grounds. And Pius XI, almost as if responding to this, says, and I'd like to quote him because the way the popes before Vatican II wrote is rather breathtaking if you're unfamiliar with this very, very punchy prose. He says, "It is unfortunately true that even today there exists a common enemy threatening everything all over the world, even the sanctuary of the family, the state, and society. That enemy is communism, which is trying to penetrate everywhere and, alas, has already penetrated so many places by violence, by plot, or by deceit, by going so far as to clothe its appearances with the best intentions." And then he again spoke about how it lately has adopted less violent attitudes and less profane appearances as a way of making it seem like, look, we just want to improve the material welfare of workers just like Catholics do.
Yeah, and we hear it all the time today where people on the religious left say, oh, yeah, well, communism's in the New Testament, right? I mean, you know, you talk about sharing, spreading the wealth, and but you hear this kind of thing all the time. And communists in the United States who were very shrewd realized how they could tap religious left preachers, how they could appeal to them. I quote in the book Earl Browder speaking to Union Theological Seminary, I think it's 1934 or 1935. And he says, I'm just off the top of my head, but it's something like, you may be surprised to know that we have preachers and people in seminary who are actual Communist Party members. You know, that's a shocking thing. He's not saying we have preachers and people in seminary who are sympathetic to communism. He says people who are actually Communist Party members. And when you understand that the Communist Party wanted sworn atheists in their membership, that's really a shocking statement. So that assumes that they're infiltrators. By the way, this too, Manning Johnson, who was one of the most prominent ex-communists African-American, brilliant guy, testified before Congress, very brave. Everybody listening, think about this. This is an incredible statement from him. He said this to Congress in sworn testimony. I know from my own experience in working in labor organizations that if we had an organization with 10,000 members and there were only about 60 or 70 communists, we controlled the organization. He continues, so with a small minority of ministers who work in an organized manner, they can always win over and subvert and dupe the majority who are disorganized and are individualistic. He's saying there, Tom, take an organization with 10,000 members, give us 60 or 70 communists, and we can control it. And I've seen so many times in my life where a handful of agitators can create such chaos and discontent and disorder that a lot of the other people in the organization kind of throw in the towel and say, I'm out of here. They don't even fight back. So these guys realize that. And not everybody wants to get up every morning at the crack of dawn and fight these kind of underground conspiratorial little battles like these hardcore leftists do. But for them, I'm telling you, this is like their religious faith. And they're dogmatic about it. They're willing to do it. 60 to 70 of them to control an organization of 10,000? Yeah, that's how they operate.
Tell me about the Catholic Committee for Human Rights.
Yeah, that's one of the organizations that we look at that might well have been penetrated, that the party tried to set up or tried to influence. So here again, what they would do is they would either create a front group or they would find a group that already existed that they thought was sympathetic to their goals. So, I mean, they're not going to go, but they meaning the communists, they're not going to go and try to penetrate like the American Legion, right? Or the Republican National Committee. But if they can find a left-leaning group and they could go to them and say, blessed are the peacemakers. Let's spread the wealth. Jesus talks about sharing. Let's share. Those groups are already sympathetic. And they create groups like the American League Against War and Fascism. That was one of their groups. Another was the American Peace Mobilization, where they went to religious left pastors and said, we need to stay out of this war in Europe. We need to stay out of this. And by the way, then they flipped on a dime the minute that Hitler betrayed Stalin June 22nd, 1941. And called their group the American People's Mobilization.
They became, of course,
pro-war. But groups like those, they will create them as a front group or they will infiltrate them, try to put members in there. And then these groups can become very powerful in pushing the communist propaganda or towing the line, even if they're not ostensibly or overtly a communist group.
At what point and for what reasons does Bella Dodd begin to have doubts?
Well, many, many reasons. She really came to see that she was serving evil and flip-flops on the Hitler-Stalin pact, like I just talked about. In fact, she's initially drawn into communism because of its opposition to fascism. Oh, the communists were great on that in the 1930s. You want to oppose Hitler? You want to oppose fascism? Come join us. Come join us. They got a lot of members that way, a lot of members, including with those front groups, right? American League Against War and Fascism, American Peace Mobilization. And then when Hitler invaded Stalin and they flipped like that, to be fair, a lot of American communists, especially Jewish American communists, left the party. They left the party. They were so disgusted by that. Because, of course, with the Hitler-Stalin pact, that means their pal Stalin, and they swore a loyalty oath to the Comintern and Stalin's Soviet Union, helped Hitler launch World War II. So for a lot of them, that was too much to swallow, and a lot of them began leaving the party at that point. Obama's mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, joined the party after the Hitler-Stalin pact, after the betrayal in 1941. But for Bella Dodd, that was one of the things. Again, what they did to the family. And it just, she still had inklings of her religious faith that she was brought up with as this little girl from Italy. And eventually, she sort of came to see the light. And then trying to break away was extremely difficult because she saw how vicious they were and how dangerous they were. any heretics who apostatized and left the faith.
I'm not sure if this is in your book because it's not directly related to Bela Dodd, but starting in the 1960s, the church adopted a different posture, somewhat, let's say, rhetorically milder posture toward communism, the Ostpolitik. And it's not clear that that actually generated any results. You know, if you're an anti-communist, it doesn't look like it generated any results. Do you have any thoughts about that shift in strategy? And I realize sort of putting you on the spot.
Yeah, no. We do talk about it. And in my book, A Pope and a President, I write about it a lot. That was under Pope Paul VI. And so it was like 1963 to 1978. And, you know, just like the detente presidents in America, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, both Republicans, and then Jimmy Carter in the 1970s. So the Ostpolitik detente, and the church was doing this as well, where they believed the best thing to do was to learn how to get along with the Soviet Union, accommodate the Soviet Union. Yeah, so they had all of Eastern Europe, but you know, look, let's just keep a lid on this and not rock the boat, have some trade and treaties. We just don't want nuclear war, right? And then Ronald Reagan came in. And Pope John Paul II, a Pole, came in and said, no, détente, to quote Reagan, is flat out immoral. It's selling our brethren in Eastern Europe down the river. What we need to do is reverse détente, reverse the Soviet hold on Eastern Europe, take down the Iron Curtain. No, we don't want to do it in a way where there's a nuclear exchange. We'll find ways to do this peacefully, which for Reagan and John Paul II meant aiding and sustaining the Solidarity movement in the 1980s as the wedge that can split the communist bloc from top to bottom in Eastern Europe. And that's exactly what they did. But it's quite possible, too, that this general penetration of the Catholic Church, of Protestant denominations, of religion in general, the tentacles may well have reached into the Vatican with some of this soft-on-communism policy of Ostpolitik.
That policy, it was just unbelievably catastrophic, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, obviously the Vatican is technically a state. Vatican City is technically, it's an extremely small state, but technically it is one. But it's not in a position to launch an aggressive war against anybody. The war against communism was largely a rhetorical one, but that didn't make it any less important that there was a voice that was reminding the world of the evils of communism at a time when, gee, here's an interesting oddball coincidence. The elites seemed to think it was kind of oddly chic to be communist. You know, I mean, that began to take shape.
Well, and imagine the power of an institution like the Catholic Church with encyclicals like Divini Redemptoris in 1937 saying, what is communism? It is a satanic scourge, which emanates with satanic logic, right? Where the church describes communism as like literally out of the pit of hell, right? Telling people in the church, you cannot follow this. And Pius XII came out and excommunicated people. And this was really important in the first Italian elections after World War II in 1947, where the Pope told Catholics in Italy, you cannot vote for the communists. And if you do so, you risk excommunication. Imagine that. They even said this about Catholic publications. They were ordered not to say things positive about communism. And here we are in America, July 2019, where the Jesuit America magazine, it's called America, America magazine, ran a piece in July 2019 called The Catholic Case for Communism. The Catholic Case for Communism. That article would have gotten America magazine excommunicated under Pius XII, all right? But you know, that's where we are today when you have a pope who's soft on the issue or silent on the issue, and this kind of ignorance is allowed to flourish. And you get people in the pews who think, well, communism, socialism, that sounds like it's right out of the New Testament. When you fail to educate people as to how bad and evil it is, you reap what you sow. We did it. The church didn't fail like that from 1846 until, you know, the papacy of Benedict XVI, but the church is failing on it today.
Well, the book is The Devil and Bela Dodd, One Woman's Struggle Against Communism and Her Redemption. I've got a link to it at tomwoods.com/2238. So I recommend you check it out if you have interest in these subjects, as so many of us do. Well, Paul, thank you so much again. You seem to be putting out books at a pretty good clip on interesting subjects. So congratulations.
Well, I don't know if congratulations are in order. It's therapy, Tom. That's kind of that's how I deal. And I like to write. So I enjoy doing this, and especially trying to do my best to get out significant stories like Belladonna. But thank you very much.
Well, my pleasure. And incidentally, being behind this microphone is therapeutic for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I've written books in the past, but this way, every single weekday, I can turn this microphone on and talk to the world. It's for all the problems we have in the world, that is an extraordinary thing, that I can turn on a microphone and talk to the world every day.
Amen.
And, I don't take that for granted. So anyway, thanks again, Paul. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Tom.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow is John Ziegler on the death of journalism. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.